Rabbi Francine Rostand was the first female conservative rabbi to lead a congregation of its size. She left a demanding leadership position in New Jersey after many years to offer her family a different kind of pioneering life in Whitefish, Montana. Among the things they've discovered during their time there has been attempts to organize an enclave for white people in Whitefish by white nationalist Richard Spencer. And I'm very happy to have Rabbi Rostand join us now on State of Belief Radio. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about the motivation for moving and how the move took place.
You know, I served in the full-time congregational rabbinate for 16 years and birthed and raised both my kids while being a full-time rabbi and my husband working full-time. When my youngest could hike a mile, we started traveling in the summers to national parks, get out of city life, get away from the crowds, per se, and just go explore nature more and see how beautiful the country is. Mm-hmm. And we took a trip to Glacier and fell in love with it and kept coming back. The two summers before we moved here, we had rented a house in Whitefish for 3 weeks and really got a sense of the lifestyle. We had our meals together and cooked and spent a lot of time together outside, exploring, hiking, kayaking, just enjoying the gifts of this amazing valley and this amazing country. Our family, from the first time we visited Montana, all of us, including our children, would joke about moving to Montana, or at least would mention Montana at least once each day. And at one point, my husband and I just looked at each other and said, well, why shouldn't we move? What's holding us back from moving to this life that we seem to really be attracted to and we feel like we need? A lot of people said, oh, come on, that's where you went for vacation. Of course it's a great life. What are you talking about? You know, what were we doing as Jews moving to this rural place?
How did the assimilation go? There have been some challenges as well, right?
Yeah, you know, there were eye-opening moments. I was burnt out. I needed a rest. I needed a sabbatical, and that's what I had designated my first year as. So I was focused on the kids and helping them adjust and adjusting myself and reading and walking. And one of the reasons we fell in love with Whitefish was because of how welcoming and open the town was. We always experienced everyone as kind, as interested in what brought us there and who we were. And overall, we found the area a nice place to move and live. You know, it's a small town. People are respectful and caring for each other because you're going to see each other the next day and the next day and the next day.
Is there a strong Jewish community there, or was it that you seen?
No.
Were you being seen as someone odd? Why are you here?
There was a Jewish community and a Jewish presence. We would not have moved if we did not find a Jewish community. Mm-hmm. There's no building. It is a synagogue without walls. But we, by coming here the past two summers, we had met the Jewish community. I had led a service, and we had joined a Shabbat dinner. And we experienced people as very kind and very open to me as a rabbi and to us as a family. So in moving, we not only, you know, looked for a house, but we did make sure that there was a place in which we could express our Judaism, share holidays with people. And for me, I did take a leadership position. They were open to leadership. And they said, look, come, and when you're ready, we're open for new leadership. And so over my first year, I helped bring two small communities that had originally broken off from each other. I helped bring them back together. We formed a new entity, had visioning and mission, you know, workshops discussing our shared values and what we could accomplish together. Hmm. And by the end of the year, we wrote bylaws and created Glacier Jewish Community.
Oh, great.
Shalom.
Francine, so white supremacist Richard Spencer got a blip of media attention with that speech to a conference in Washington, D.C. recently, but he's much more of a presence in Whitefish, your new home, isn't he?
Right. I mean, we moved here July 2014, and I got word that in October there was a city council meeting to discuss Richard Spencer. It ended up that he and his mother were intending to build a building in town that would be office space as well as retail space. And there was great concern that he would be opening up his offices in Whitefish. So that was my first introduction to Richard Spencer and to white nationalism, as he calls it. And it was, you know, an interesting meeting of a group of, you know, residents who were very upset that white nationalism would be associated with Whitefish. Hmm. It's a very open, and it's a town that promotes diversity, encourages diversity, and even though we don't have a lot of diversity, we do have more than you might find somewhere else, and there is a message of inclusion and welcoming that comes from our town. So people were very concerned.
So what thoughts were running through your mind when you were listening to all this?
It didn't make me want to move. I mean, certainly it gave us pause, but then we went to the meeting and we listened to all the people speaking up, and yeah, a number of Jewish people spoke up. A number of those of us in the community spoke from our experience. One of our longtime residents, her grandfather is a Holocaust survivor, and spoke from that perspective. But there were many, many people who spoke from their Christian perspective and from their Buddhist perspective and from their perspective as a human being, that the values that Richard Spencer was promoting are not those of our town and not anything we want to do with. Now, of course, he can buy a building and open a business. No one can stop him from doing that. No one can stop him from speaking because of the great nation we live in. But what I was impressed with was that the town in just 1 month turned around, and they couldn't do anything, couldn't pass any laws or anything, but they made a proclamation about reiterating the town's values of openness to diversity and wanting to welcome and include people of all races and creeds, of all religions, of all sexual orientations. And Richard Spencer came to the second one. I spoke at the first one and spoke about how, as a new resident, what attracted us to the town was its welcoming nature, but that I could also tell them that the perception from the outside when you walk down the streets is that it's not so diverse. And that if this town wants to truly be welcoming, we needed to take some action, make some public statements, and do some actions that show that we're opening. And I shared the story. I mean, my kids did have a hard adjustment. They went from all day, every day Jewish day school and growing up in the synagogue to a community that's very diverse and meets infrequently. And they had to really, you know, find their way to express their identity. My son did not tell people he was Jewish. He didn't want to stand out. You know, he looked around and everyone looked the same. Mm-hmm. And he was anxious. He was a sixth grader.
What is it like now with Richard Spencer? Does he have a significant influence in the community?
So since that moment, I've been following and reading and listening to his podcast every once in a while and trying to understand who he really is impacting. I do not believe that he has a following in Whitefish or even in the Flathead Valley. There certainly are white nationalists and white supremacists in Montana, you know, in the West, in all over the country. But Richard Spencer seems to be promoting some sort of pseudo-intellectual, almost like gamesmanship. Like, what can I say to get the most attention that I can justify with my theories that sound philosophical, but if you pull it apart, it's just hatred and bigotry dressed up with bigger words than someone who's clean-shaven and wearing a suit.
Yeah.
The town is very unhappy. People are very upset. And actually, I believe he's felt that sense of being unwelcome because of his beliefs. Somehow he announced he was going to be moving to Virginia full time. And so I think there is a sense of relief, but right now, you know, we haven't seen that. We've just seen all of this national coverage and attention. Richard Spencer from Whitefish. But Whitefish is way, way bigger than Richard Spencer.
Tell me a story or two of encouraging experiences you've had in the community.
The encouraging experiences I've had are in my work with the Jewish community. And that isn't to say that, you know, things aren't great with everyone else, but as a rabbi, that's the first thing I think of, and that's my most recent experience. You know, if you move out to a place where there's no synagogue, mm-hmm. An area that isn't even represented by a Jewish federation, you know, really don't fall into the catchment of any standard Jewish institutions, mm-hmm. your expression of your Judaism is not a priority in your life. It's not your top priority. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that it isn't significant in your life. And so, you know, what I have been doing by publicizing our community and my presence and offering a number of different ways for Jews to get together. We have a social once a month and an opportunity to do social action. That's what I was just doing yesterday. I was building with Habitat for Humanity with two members of our community, and to show people that they can express their Judaism and articulate their identity with a group of people without having to go to a service all in Hebrew that they don't understand, mm-hmm. has been inspiring for people. And I just feel blessed that I'm able to do that, that I can invite someone to my table and teach them a little bit about Jewish tradition, mm-hmm. and also just help them learn how to articulate their Jewish identity in this atmosphere. That's empowering. And that's been inspiring work.
Sure.
And it's hard sometimes. I would love to pop into a synagogue and listen to someone else preach or watch someone else preach services.
Yeah. Francine, are there lessons that you've learned through this experience that would be useful for so many others who are feeling right now disoriented and lost in their own country?
Yes. You know, what I can share is from my own experience, and this would be the other encouraging, you know, aspect of life here. This evening, there are actually three different groups of people meeting in our small town. Our town is 6,000 people. We have three different groups. At least one of them is expected to be over 100 people. Three different groups of citizens who are concerned about the direction the country is moving in. They're concerned about the increase in bias incidents, which we've experienced in our schools and in our cities, and especially college campuses throughout Montana. And people are coming together to talk, and not just to talk. You know, that happened in the week after the election, but people are coming together and saying, hey, I want to do something. I want to be more active in the community, and I want someone to hold me accountable. So the idea of forming groups where people are sharing their concerns and building special interest groups and then holding themselves accountable for action, that's pretty powerful. So that's happening here. And the other thing is my experience as a parent. You know, my son, our whole family learned that April 20th was Hitler's birthday because last year my son's seventh grade class during lunch sang happy birthday to Hitler. The encouraging part of that experience was that the administration and the teachers were very quick to respond and discipline the children involved. What we learned was that the three ringleaders of that incident had been making anti-Semitic comments and telling, quote, Holocaust jokes, end quote, to my son for the past couple of months. And we said to my son, why didn't you tell us? And he said, you know, I could handle it. We're like, you don't need to handle something like that. And he said, I didn't want to tell you what they were saying because it was so awful. And, you know, we tried to tell him no one ever has to bear the burden of that kind of hatred, of that awful, hurtful experience alone. And teenagers don't like to stand up. They don't like to speak out because they don't like to, you know, be different from anyone else.
Sure.
And we just really encouraged him to not ever think that he's alone in this world. He always has his family. He saw from that incident, he has his teachers and administration. So, you know, to have discussions with your children of all ages, but especially teenagers, to say, you don't have to speak out and yell from the rafters and attract the attention of everybody, unless you want to. But you don't have to do that. You can just go find someone quietly who will give you support. No one has to walk through this world alone. That would be some of my advice. My daughter's a high school student. She had a classmate tell her that the Holocaust didn't really happen. And, you know, again, as a parent, I was proud of the way she handled it. You know, she didn't unleash her teenage fury on him. She just said, what makes you think that? And she just kept asking him, what makes you say that? What makes you think that? And responding to his answers, yeah, and being unwavering that, no, you're wrong.
Rabbi Francine Rustin lives with her husband and two children in Whitefish, Montana. After many years of congregational leadership in New Jersey, the family made the move for a different quality of life and found themselves in a world both familiar and different. Rabbi Rustin, thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. I hope I was able to help or inspire.